Everybody, Will Alexander here. Welcome to Dog Show Tips, the interview chair brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV and Pro Plan. Today's interview chair is Charlotte Patterson. So sit back and relax, and we know it's going to be fun. Hi, everybody. Will here with this week's interview chair. We have Charlotte Patterson. How are you, Charlotte?
Doing well. Thanks for asking.
Good. You look good. Are you excited about this weekend?
I am excited. It's always great to see all these people and, you know, to honor all these various candidates. And everybody's so worthy. How can you not be excited about it?
Now, have you been nominated before?
No.
No? This is your first
time. And quite frankly, I was quite surprised when I got the news. It's always nice to be thought of, though.
Yeah, you shouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I just so everybody knows, Charlotte was nominated for Judge of the Year. So let's hope it works.
Thank you.
But it'll be fun. I'll be there to cheer you on. So
good, good.
So we're going to get ahead. First, how's the weather there in Florida?
82 degrees and sunny.
Oh, very nice. It's sunny here too, but it's not 82 degrees.
It's been very, very warm. Very warm.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's always nice, though. You're in Florida, so I guess you chose to be that warm. So,
well, I guess, but it's a little bit early in the season to be this warm. But, you know, you live with what you got, babe.
Exactly. All right, let's get started. Tell me, how did you get started in the sport of dogs, and what was your age when you first got started?
Well, you know, I was born and raised in Alabama. Everybody had a dog, right? Of course, you got it from the neighbor down the block. But you still had a dog. And then I moved with my husband to England. And, of course, I had to have a dog. So I bought a toy poodle.
How old were you at this point, Charlotte?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I was, like, in my 20s, probably. And meanest little thing in the world. Oh, my God, it was a mean dog. And so then, you know, the years progressed. And Edward was in the CIA. And so we moved from place to place. And, you know, one dog led to another. I had a German Shepherd. I had another poodle. I had, you know, but when we got back to the States, I went to visit a friend in Fort Clinton, Ohio, and there on her couch was the cutest dog I'd ever seen. And I said, "What's that?" She said, "That's a Chinese pug." And I knew then that was it. So we purchased this little dog for $150. And that's the beginning of having more pugs.
What year was that, approximately?
Oh, I got my first pug in 1969. Okay. A long time ago. The breed has changed a lot in those years for the better.
So carry on. Where did we go from here?
Well, I had this little dog, and then I decided that I probably should do better than that. So we went to some breeders in Maryland and bought a bitch. And it turned out she was well bred. So we went from there and bred a litter and went to a dog show, and somebody told me this. The very first dog show, it was a match I went to at Rock Creek, and Dawn Vick was judging. And I put my precious little girl on the table, and she said, just like everybody told me to do, and she said, "May I see her bite?" And I said, "Oh, she doesn't bite." That was the very first time I was ever in the ring. Needless to say, I didn't win, but she was very kind to me.
That's
and
good.
Then, you know, you get hooked. And, of course, you know, you start going to shows and you start having fun and you start meeting people and join the Pug Hug Club of Maryland. And then, you know, it just is one of those things. And then went on to be very, very active in my parent club. I was president for like 12 years of the Pug Club of America. And Edward, of course, judged my late husband. And after we handled dogs for about, I don't know, 10, 15 years.
So you're skipping over a lot of things here.
Oh, am I?
Yes. Dogs? How did you start handling dogs? You went from, "No, my dog doesn't bite," to being a handler.
Well, we just started going to lots of dog shows. And then, you know, somebody would say, "Oh, I can't go to so-and-so this weekend. Will you take Snookums?" So we took Snookums and started having some good luck. I think our handling skills improved considerably. And before we knew it, we were taking two or three other dogs. And then before long, we decided to take three or four other pugs that belonged to other people. And it just grew. It was one of those things that grew. So we then bought, we decided we should buy a motorhome. So we bought a motorhome, and the first circuit we went on was the old New England circuit. And talk about being hooked. That was probably the biggest thing in my life at the time. We went to all these gorgeous old New England homes, and we had three or four pugs with us. And we did very well. Met some what I considered to be very famous people, Jane Forsythe. I remember Jane. And we did that for a number of years, and we became more and more successful and do a lot of different breeds. One of my favorites was a soft coated Wheaton Terrier. And it was owned locally. And every weekend when she picked her up and we got home, she always paid us in cash. Now, in those days, you were charging $25 a day to handle a dog. So she would always peel off these tens and fives and pay us in cash. So one day I said, that's very strange that she always pays us in cash. And so one of my kennel club members said, well, don't you know she's the stripper down at the Green Frog? Of course, I said, Edward, go home. We're laundering this money right now. So, but we handled lots of different breeds, and it was just one of those things that it just sort of grew and grew and grew. And finally, we had like a 36-foot motorhome with 10 or 12 dogs and went to about 100 shows a year.
Oh, wow.
And then one day, Edward said, I'm tired of driving a motorhome. I'm tired of loading and unloading crates. Let's judge. And I said, I won't do that. I like what I'm doing. Well, he didn't. And obviously he won. Now, at that time, I was handling pugs for Mrs. Isabel Robeson. She was not happy. But anyway, we put in for judging. I was very fortunate. I got the toy group. And we started to judge, and we both judged together until he's dead. And I'm still judging today, 34 years later.
Through all this, through your, when you first started with your pug that you first met, not the one that didn't bite the judge, but the next one, did you have a mentor that helped, that guided you throughout this?
Not really, because in those days, I don't think it was at that level that it is now. People just went to dog shows and showed their dogs. And you would talk to other people and you would look at your dogs, and most of the time you'd think your dog was better anyway. So, and Edward was very, very good. He was a good dog man. He had a good eye. And we sort of muddled through together. We did some horrible mistakes, I'm sure. The first major I ever won was under Robert Reedy. And he was so kind to me. And I thought, oh, I love this man. But there have been a lot of judges over the years that have been very, very kind to me. And that's my aim. One of these days, I want somebody to say I was kind to them.
You've always been kind to me.
Well, that's what it ought to be about. It's all a learning process.
Exactly.
You know, people start off not knowing much, and then they have people to help them along the way. And that's exactly what happened to me.
Do you remember your first assignment?
Oh, yes. Pensacola, Florida. And that day I did poodles. And I had Dennis McCoy in my ring. And I'd had everybody making triangles. And when Dennis came up, I said, sir, make a star. And he said, Jewish or American? I remember that so definitely. It was so good. I said, your choice. But that was my very first assignment.
Wow.
I was scared, but you know, it was so exciting.
Yeah.
Like, it's like when you win your first point or when you judge your first show, it just, the moment is just so thrilling that here I am looking at these dogs making decisions. And that's the way it ought to be.
Yeah,
it ought to be enjoyable. It ought to be fun. It ought to be, you ought to be caring about what you're doing. At least that's the way I look at it.
Now, how old were you when you first started judging?
That would be telling my age, which I'm certainly not going to do. So that's an improper question.
You can give me a roundabout?
No.
No.
So moving on.
Okay. So you judged, that was your first assignment, the Dennis and the Star pattern. You must have a lot of memorable moments judging dogs, though.
I should write a book. I really, really should write a book. But, you know, that's the fun of it. You can do as much or as little. I always say to people getting started, you can go to a show every weekend or you can go once a month.
Right.
And that's the fun of it, is to enjoy what you've got. Enjoy your dogs. Enjoy the people that you know. Enjoy that part of your life.
Now, did Edward start in the toy group as well?
Yes.
And so you're both toy judges to start with then.
Right. That's right. We're both very fortunate. We both judged the garden. And we both did our national specialties. And I'm a lucky woman. I'm very, very fortunate.
Well, I want to know more about your assignments. I want to know. So you don't talk about dogs that you've already, that are still being shown, but some dogs that you've judged over the years, that, even some that you haven't judged that you wished you could have or have been a part of.
I loved Mick. I love the terrier group. I'll have to admit, I'm a sucker for the terrier. And I loved Mick. I loved his presence. I loved his carriage. He exemplified to me everything I would want in the Kerry Blues. I adored that dog. And I did Kerry Blues at Montgomery one year, and I had a lovely entry. And I put up an Irish dog, and it was thrilling. It's just thrilling. I was at the Garden the year that Kiss Me Kate was the number one dog, and she got beat in the breed. And I was stunned. I thought, how could that happen? Of course, you find out all sorts of little secrets as time goes by, but I was stunned. And I would have thought, I would have loved that opportunity. I remember one day being in the ring in Houston, and Michael Kemp had won the Terrier group. And Michael, as you may know, was a talker. And we were standing in the best in show ring, and he kept saying, "He's looking at me. He's looking at me. I'm winning this. He's looking at me." And I thought, well, you probably are. And the judge came down and he pointed to me. I don't know who's more surprised, Michael or me, but it was a thrilling moment. You know, those little things sort of stick out in your mind. And, you know, I think one of the grandest things about dogs is every time you whelp a litter and you hold that little 4-ounce puppy in your hand, you think, is this the next great one? There's always hope. There's always that feeling of what's around the next corner. And I think that's pretty important.
And that just, I know you still have a dog because we talked about your old dog earlier. Do you have more than just that dog?
No, I just have her. It's the last litter I ever bred. Yeah. And the first black litter I ever bred.
How old is she?
She's almost 14.
See, you told her age. You wouldn't tell your age.
And her brother won the national specialty, and she finished in 4 shows. Wow. And I thought to myself, maybe I should have started to bring these blacks earlier, but that's the only black litter I ever bred. And she's a witch. Yeah. She lets me live here and enjoy her, but leaves black hair all over my white furniture. But I don't know how anybody could live without a dog. I get ready to pack every weekend. She sits in my suitcase. But I have 2 daughters that live here. They're both teachers, and she goes and she stays with them on the weekends when I'm gone. So that works out great. Yeah. Destin is, whether you know or not, Destin's a little small town on the Gulf of Mexico, and its main business is fishing. And they have lots of charter boats. So it's a population, regular population, about 6,000 people.
Oh, wow.
So it's a nice place to live.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I have a house on the lake. And so, you know, it's beautiful outside. You enjoy it.
I'm sure. So is there some memorable pugs that you've had?
Well, of my own, I had a bitch I bred. Her name was Champion Fatal Attraction. And we called her Glenn. She's probably the best bitch I ever bred. Didn't like Japanese. If we were at a show and there was a Japanese person, she would bark. She just didn't like them for some reason. I loved a little bitch that the Cups up in North Carolina had, Sari. I thought she was beautiful. And had she been in the right circumstances, I think she won 6 or 7 best, but had she been in the right circumstances, she probably would have won 140.
Wow.
She was just a stunning, stunning bitch. And in lots of my presentations and when lots of people contact me for information, Sari is always included in one of their pictures. I have a great movement picture of her. And I always say, this is what they ought to look like. This is what they ought to move like. Just because they're a toy dog doesn't mean that they can't move.
Yeah.
Particularly if there's food around. Pugs can always move after food. But, you know, it's a breed that's very dear to me. It's been part of my life all these years. But Neither of my children have had pugs. My one daughter, Emily, has had Poms. She loved Poms. My other daughter had Shih Tzus.
Did they show up?
No. As a matter of fact, I helped them get them. My daughter, Emily, had four Norwich that I got from the Great House. So whenever they want a dog, I usually contact somebody and say, you know, do you have an older champion dog or something like that?
And it works out. We all do that.
Yeah. Gives the dog a good home and, you know, they enjoy the rest of their lives. So, as I say, it's dogs to me are not only and the dog world is not only a passion. I think it's a very rewarding way to spend your life. I know some fabulous people I've met over the years all over the world. Well, I mean, after all, I met you. And, you know, I think that that's a very rewarding way to live out your life. To me, it's better than roses. I can't imagine anybody being a rose gardener for the rest of their life, but I'm sure there are.
No, I'm sure there are, yeah.
I have a living, breathing somebody sitting on my foot, and that works out pretty well.
I know. I don't know. I do a lot of interviews, and sometimes I talk to people that don't have dogs anymore. I always wonder, how does that happen? You know?
How do they come home to an empty house?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. And I'm sure when this one goes, and she's the longest-lived pug I've ever raised, I'm sure when she goes, there will be another one. Maybe not a pug, but there'll be a dog.
I have two beagles, an Irish setter, and a Bouvier. And it's a pain when I have to go off somewhere to find places.
You're a glutton. You've always been a glutton for punishment. I remember stories about you. Uh-oh. So, moving on.
Moving on. Some memorable assignments.
Well, I judged in Sweden one time. It was the very first time I had judged where you had to do written critiques. And I had a secretary. I was doing the Pug National. And I had a secretary. And she followed me around and wrote down everything I said. And in the puppy class in walked this black dog. Oh, it was stunning. And the minute I saw him, I went, Jesus Christ. And she wrote down, Jesus Christ.
Oh, no.
And I said to her, you know, you're not supposed to write down that. She said, they told me to write down everything you said. I was so glad that I hadn't used any profanity. But she wrote down, Jesus. So I called my friend at the Swedish Kennel Club. And I said, please take that out of my critique. But that was a joy to do that. Okay. And I've judged in Australia several times, and that's always great fun. I can remember judging Great Danes there. And when I turned around, class of about eight, they had all held their ears up in the air. I said, I know what a drop ear looks like, so you can let the ears down. But, you know, you just you have these experiences. I've never judged in the Orient. I've been invited several times, and I went to Tokyo and showed dogs. But I've never judged there. I've judged in Mexico and South America, of course, Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that, you know, you look at all the places that you've been and the experiences you have and the people you've met. It's really hard to pick out the best. I just think they're all so memorable as a group. And then the people that you meet that sort of stick out in your mind. I can remember one time when I was judging in Sweden and I got through and this lady said, are you tired? And I said, yes, I am. She said, come up here, I'll give you a foot massage. So she did. So, I mean, you can't beat experiences like that, can you?
No, my gosh.
And I would like to see people understand more that judges are human. I read some of the comments a lot of time on social media, and I think, yeah, but you might not have liked that person's dress, but did she judge that class correctly?
Right, yeah.
I mean, those are things that bother me at times. I really wish that people would understand we try, we make mistakes, of course we do, but we're also somebody that's very interested in what we're doing.
Right.
A lot of us have devoted our lives to it.
I agree.
And I think that's what people lose sight of sometimes. They think, oh, they get paid, they do this. You take a three-day weekend, that's 5 days. 2 days worth of travel, 3 days worth of judging. And you're not making any money. My accountant wonders why I do it. But, I mean, you know, it's just probably something that a lot of people don't realize what it means when you stand out on concrete and judge 175 dogs in a day.
Oh, yeah. I just started judging. It's exhausting. It's a different kind of exhausting. But
it's not only physically, it's mentally exhausting because your brain should be in gear the whole time. You're comparing, you're remembering, you're making decisions that in some ways will affect breeding programs, that will affect whether or not that person ever goes back to a dog show. So, you know, I think judging is a huge responsibility.
It really is.
I think that people sometimes don't take it as seriously as it should be taken. I think that they need to understand the weight of it. That's my soapbox for the day.
So staying on that topic somewhat then, if someone came to you and said they would like to be a judge, what advice would you give them?
Well, I don't know if you remember, there was a judge in North Carolina. Her name was Wilma Hunter. No. And I did ask her one day, he said, you have to have the skin of a rhinoceros.
You have to have the what?
The skin of a rhinoceros.
Oh.
Really tough. And I can remember her saying that to me. And years later, I thought, you know, she's right. Because it's a lot of the times you're in a situation where no matter what you do, it's not going to be right. It's not going to be wrong. And at the end of the day, you're only going to make three or four people really, really happy. So you have to understand that, you know, not only are you going to get praise, you're also going to get criticism. And I think sometimes judges get hung up on the fact of trying not to be criticized and trying to do it right all the time, that they don't enjoy what they're doing. And they should.
Yeah, I agree. They look anxious out there. You talk to them afterwards and they just were so nervous about the whole thing. I don't see how that's any fun. So,
or they talk about that their feet hurt or they wish that it didn't like lunch or something like that. I mean, if that's what you feel about it, why do it?
Yeah.
A lot of work, as you have found out. But, you know, I do think as a whole, and I can only speak for American judges, I think as a whole, most of them really, really try. Do we always succeed? No. Have we made mistakes? Of course. I certainly have made my share. But I think as a whole, we as a group work hard at it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think the education system down there is very good, and they only want you to succeed.
So. Well, now everybody, of course, is all up in the air about this recertification test. I haven't taken it yet. I'm sure I will soon. But I think those things are really good. I talked to Sarah Teagan years and years and years ago.
Oh, sorry.
And, I said to her, you know, there ought to be some way that judges have to be recertified or they have to be something. And this was probably 30 years ago. And she agreed. And I think now it's happened. You know, mm-hmm. We're all going to be recertified. And I think the new course that's come out about child abuse and being able to spot it and help, I think that's a big step by the American Kennel Club to say, okay, fine, we're going to help. We're going to get involved in this. And that's what we should all do, is get involved. No, not only with social media, but get involved in our sport. I think judges should still show. I don't think they should special dogs, but I think they just need to go in the ring sometime and go reserve when they think they should have won.
Well, I still show my dogs, and I think it's really helped me. It's kept things in perspective. It really has.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%. I certainly do. And I noticed that several years ago, you interviewed Bob Dawson used to be in the Philippines. He's now in Bangkok. But I mean, he bought a pug from me years and years ago, and we established a relationship, and we still talk back and forth on Facebook.
Well, he's a wonderful man.
Oh, he's great, and he's a wonderful judge. I wish we saw more of him here in the States.
Yeah, we used to see him quite a bit in Canada. I haven't seen him for a while now, but I always enjoyed his time. I always enjoyed when you were up here, so.
Well.
You were fun.
I remember the show that we did. I think it was the Whitney Show. It was over Halloween, and all the handlers dressed up. You were stunning. You were a soldier. I remember that. I remember things about you, but and you know that should be part of it too. Not only your intelligence and your respect for them, but you also ought to be able to enjoy it.
Yeah,
I do.
That's part of it. It's so much fun to be around you and watch you judge, just because you can tell you're enjoying yourself. So,
and they often know when I'm not too. So I have to say that. Sometime, you know, I was at a show recently in St. Louis, and it was just a horrible class, and two of the handlers were sitting ringside, and that one girl said, I want to play poker with you. You've got a great poker face. She said, oh, God, I'm sorry. But, you know, sometimes it's it happens to get those. I remember one time early on in my career, I did the Best in Show. I had a tiny little show. And I was standing there thinking, these, I don't like any of them. And then there was a man standing there with overalls on, and he had an American Foxhound. I can't remember his name, but apparently he showed a lot. And I gave him Best in Show. And for years until he died, at every show he would come up and say, here's my girlfriend. At every show, he was just the neatest sort of little fella. So, you know, put all those in a memory bank and it comes up pretty full.
That's right. You do. And it's fun to think back on those. I have so many occasions I think back that just make me smile when I'm by myself.
Yeah, right, right. And don't you think a lot of times that's what keeps you going on? Yeah. You remember those good times and you remember those good people and you remember, and some of the times that weren't so good just sort of fade away. You just keep going on and on and on.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, it's like anyway. Now, over your over the years, did you have anybody? I sort of touched on this when you were first started. Did you have a mentor? But did you have a judging mentor?
Well, I was very fortunate in that I was a good friend of Connie Barton's, and Connie, of course, had worked as, you know, a kennel manager, been an AKC rep, and Connie gave me a lot of good advice about things to say and do and where to study and stuff like that. She was very, very kind to me and to Edward. And we stayed with her often. She was a wonderful cook. And I was very fortunate to start out with somebody like Connie.
Oh, for sure. I have a memory of Connie. I was about 10.
And of course, Harry Smith.
Oh, Harry, yeah.
He said he was a pug man. He never bred a good litter, but I mean, he was a pug. He loved the breed. He would have told you that himself. And Edward was in Kenya, and that's where he met Harry. And we were lifelong friends. So, and I still miss him.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
You know, you look back at these people, and a lot of them are not there anymore, and you think what good times you had and what you learned and what they added to your life, and that you hope you added something to theirs.
Don't you find it amazing how fast things happen, though? Like, I think about something that happened to me, and I think, well, that was just yesterday. It was like 10 years ago. So
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I look at my little black pug dog here, and she's all gray. And I think, how did that happen?
Yeah.
It couldn't have been that long ago that I had her in the ring, and then I look at her registration, and she'll be 14 in September.
You know what shocks me? I'll be at a show and I'll be talking to someone that used to work for me, and I still think of them as kids, and they're like 40 years old.
Well, that in itself is a frightening experience, I'm sure.
Oh, well. So what I asked you about what advice for a judge, what advice, this is a tough one, especially nowadays. If a youngster came up to you and asked and said to you they wanted to be a professional handler, what advice would you give them?
Watch. Watch the people in the ring. Watch how they treat their dogs. Watch how they put their hands. Never, ever, ever stop watching. I think you learn so much just by observing.
Oh, I do too.
And I think that's how it all should start. Have something in mind you want to do, and then watch. And never, ever compromise. Never. In your breeding program, in your judging career, in your hand, never, ever compromise. Always aim for the best. Always.
I agree. That's good advice. All right. I'll ask you one more question then. But then I'll see you in New York. But I'll ask you one more question. If you could give advice to the 20-year-old Charlotte, is there any advice you'd give her now?
Probably I would say, remember that one day this is all going to come to a close. So enjoy every moment. Don't think about the little things. Just remember the good things.
That is more good advice. I should call you more often.
Yes, you should.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today. And I know it took a while for us to coordinate, but it worked out well. So
I know. In the end, it did. But it's been delightful, Will. Thanks so much for thinking of
me. And I wish you all the luck this week. I'm looking forward to seeing you and And I'm sure no matter what you decide to wear, it's going to be perfect.
Well, we'll see. Take care, my friend. Safe travels.
You too. Be good. Thank you, Charlotte. That was great. And best of luck this week in New York. Charlotte was nominated for Judge of the Year. And if you like what you see here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. And don't forget about the podcast. Wayne Cavanaugh, myself, the Dog Show Drive. And we'll see you down the road. Take care, everyone.